Breadbox Media Programming is brought to you by introducing the redesigned CatholicSingles.com, featuring new ways that put the spotlight on the person and their faith, not just a profile picture. For the past 20 years, faithful Catholics have used CatholicSingles.com, and the reimagined CatholicSingles.com website is ready to help single Catholics take the next step in sharing meaningful relationships with other faithful Catholics. Remember, CatholicSingles.com for faith, fellowship, and love.
Hello, this is international Catholic singer Anna Nuzzo, inviting you to join me and Father Dan Cambra of the Marian Fathers on a select international tour's Divine Mercy pilgrimage to Poland and the Czech Republic. It takes place in September of 2019, and we would love for you to join us. For more information, go to my website, annanuzzo.com. Thank you, and God bless.
Hello and welcome to Living. This is Lavinia Spirito with Mary Lou Nemechek, and we are going back a little bit to our Bible study roots in the next few shows. We will be studying the book of the prophet Isaiah from the Old Testament in Lexington this fall at the cathedral, which is sort of the mothership of our Bible study, Catholic Bible study.
Yeah, the great testing ground.
It's a great testing ground, exactly. And we are going to cover Isaiah in the fall and the book of Psalms in the winter, spring. So, yeah, those are rather ambitious undertakings, I'm sure. But we've had these requests for a very long time. And as I was saying to you earlier, Mary Lou, or to other people that we had lunch together, even though a lot of people say they want to do Isaiah extended, I don't think a lot of people who are just studying the Bible, without it being their vocation, really want to stand still for 22 lessons on Isaiah. So that's why I made it 12, and I thought it'd be more manageable. I've excised quite a bit of material, but most of the things I've excised are the so-called woe oracles, or the woe prophecies, meaning the prophecies where the prophet is condemning or cursing or judging various Gentile nations. And they tend to be very similar in theme, and that way we could cut out quite a bit of material and still make it the study manageable for a lot of people.
Well, I think that you could really get in the weeds if you try to do each and every chapter and each and every word. I don't think we don't tend to want to be Bible scholars per se. We want to have a clear understanding and how it affects, us personally in our faith and how it's connected with other things in the Bible. So,
yeah, well said. Well said. That's exactly our goal. So it's 66 chapters. So it's a lot of material, but hopefully we've reduced it to a digestible amount. It's still going to be challenging, but I think it'll be a good challenging and it'll be fun. And hopefully a lot of windows and doors will be opened. Today we're going to, and maybe in the next show, we're going to try and introduce the whole subject of Isaiah, who Isaiah was, the place that he occupies in the Old Testament, what kind of evidence we have of people studying the book of Isaiah, how far back, what kind of influence the book of Isaiah has had over the rest of the scriptures. And it's interesting because really it's one of the most influential books in the entire Bible. It is the second most cited Old Testament book in the New Testament. There are 63 citations to the book of Isaiah in the New Testament. So that's Jesus quoting Isaiah, that's Paul quoting Isaiah, that's Peter quoting Isaiah, there's Luke quoting Isaiah. It's very interesting, very, very cited.
That is interesting.
The book of Psalms, which is the longest book, 150 Psalms, has 67 citations in the New Testament. So that should give you an idea of the influence of the book of Isaiah on the rest of the scriptures. The name itself of Isaiah, of course, we've anglicized everything in Italian, it's Isaiah, and it's as well. But it comes from the Hebrew, Yeshayahu, which means the Lord saves, or Yahweh saves, which is, I think, is pretty appropriate to have that kind of name, right? Yeshayahu.
Right.
And it's in a certain way, if we were to look at the book of Isaiah, it would be like an Old Testament framework upon which to hang most of the materials that we encounter in the New Testament, which I think is fascinating. It provides really a theological lens or a framework within which to understand the Old, but also the New Testaments. So that's very important. If you're interested in the Bible at all, you're going to wrestle with the prophet Isaiah sooner or later. And when I say wrestle, I say some pieces might seem a little dense, considering also that, as most prophets, he does not write in chronological order, right? So he writes topically, he goes back, he hits other things. There's a historical narrative, which is plopped right there in the middle of the book, that people have a hard time placing, where is this? If you want to know where Isaiah fits in the context of the prophets that you may have read in the scripture, because remember, there are many other prophets who are in the scriptures who don't have books named after them, right?
Right.
We've heard of Elijah, and we've heard of Elisha, and we've heard of Nathan, and we heard of a bunch of other prophets, right? Who we hear of, but we don't hear from. So the named books of prophets in the Old Testament are divided into two different categories, not by importance, but just by the length of their books. So the four major prophets are Isaiah, Jeremiah, Ezekiel, and Daniel. And they're only known as major prophets just because they have a lot of material, not because they're more important or less important. And the minor prophets, the 12 minor prophets, due entirely just to the volume of their work, right? So much shorter works are, of course, the remainder of, you know, the named books of the prophets that you would have encountered in the scriptures. And so in the minor prophets, of course, you have, let's see if I can name them all. In the minor prophets, you have Hosea, Joel, Amos, Obadiah, Jonah, Micah, Nahum, Habakkuk, Zephaniah, Haggai, Zechariah, and Malachi. And this is going in order of from oldest to newest. Hosea and Amos are two minor prophets that prophesy about the same time as Isaiah does. So they have similar themes. Hosea and Amos were prophesying to the northern kingdom. And Isaiah was prophesying primarily, he was a court prophet. So we're going to explore what that means. At the court of the king of Judah, descendant of David.
The time frame for this is what? The Amos entry BCE.
Yes, so he was born in the year, probably the year 700. Mm-hmm. And he dies at a very, very ripe old age in the 600s, put to death by wicked king Manasseh. So the extent of his, the dates of his ministry are roughly 740 to 681 BC. Okay. And he was probably executed around 668 by Manasseh, and we're going to get into that. So he probably was born around the year 700. So that would make him a bit extremely old dude.
Yeah.
Just old by any reckoning, right?
Yeah.
His prophetic ministry spans a good half a century. But as we know, that's possible. I mean, you know, that's well within the possibility of the lifespan, right? Mm-hmm. So Isaiah's role really was to have been, he was called, you know, prophets were called, right? So he was called, and we have a fascinating chapter that we're going to address in a different show. In Isaiah 6, we have the detailing of the call of God to Isaiah, the call to being a prophet.
Right.
And it's fascinating. It's literally one of my favorite, even before I didn't know much about the scriptures, Isaiah 6, when it says, we see the Lord and his train fills the temple. That's one of my favorite passages about just beholding the majesty of God and his courts. And Isaiah has a call that takes place within the courts of the Lord. So really just absolutely fascinating.
Well, he really did volunteer, because when the Lord asked for someone, you know, he said, here I am, Lord. So I give him a lot of credit.
That's right, because Jeremiah also was called and volunteered, right? But then afterwards he says, why did you call me Lord? I was duped, and I let myself be duped, which is an interesting reading on Sunday when you start with that and people's heads come up, because they don't really know what they're talking about. But it's the burden of the prophet, because most of these prophets basically all of the prophets. So whether it's the writing prophets or the prophets that you read about in the historical books, for the most part, did not have fun careers. They were not popular. They were not successful. And for the most part, people just did not listen to what they had to say, which, you know, think about that.
Nothing has changed, has
it? That's pretty daunting, you know? You receive an authentic word from the Lord and nobody wants to hear it.
Right.
You know, it may have to do also, as we know, as moderns, with the fact that nobody likes to be corrected, right?
Right.
The message of the prophets is primarily, there is a covenant. God is God over all the world, all over all the earth. You have given yourself to God through a covenant, but guess what? You broke the covenant. You know, it's most of the message of all the writing prophets is covenantal breach, meaning there was a covenant, the covenant that God made with Abraham and with Moses, and you, Israel, chosen people, broke it. Of course, the consequences of breaking the covenant will extend also into the New Testament, to the people of God, to the church, right?
That's exactly right. The consequences are never good.
Because we are the beneficiaries of the new covenant. Mm-hmm. But a new covenant implies that you have to keep it.
You know,
it's like there are two parties to a covenant, just like there's a couple parties to a contract generally. And the idea is that you both parties have to keep the covenant.
And, you know what?
Yeah.
What strikes me is that, you know, he was commissioned to go out. And he accepted that. He said, send me. I mean, he was very open to that. Well, nothing has changed today when you're talking about the covenant and everything. We're all commissioned, you know, through baptism and confirmation, et cetera, to go out. And it really, the roles are the same in so many ways. So I think that this study in particular, you know, will reinforce that, you know, he was called, you know, to go out and change the world, to restore that covenant. And in today's world, we're called to go out and do the very same thing.
Exactly. And with the idea that a covenant is something that you only get out of by dying.
Right.
It's not a contract. So both parties to a covenant are held to keep the covenant on pain of death.
Right.
A penalty of death. And so it's no surprise, really, that when, especially Israel, both the northern kingdom and the southern kingdom start breaking the covenant that God had made with his people to set them apart from all the other peoples and be his firstborn, to be an example and a light to the nations, to the Gentiles, that God has something to say about it. So that's what the prophets talk about. They talk about mostly three main things, and that's what we see present in Isaiah. In Isaiah specifically, we see three themes. One, there was a covenant, but you broke it. Two, judgment is coming because of the result of you breaking the covenant. Judgment is coming, and it's coming. Uh-oh, judgment
it's
is here, you know, that kind of thing. And then, but on the other side, the third prong is restoration and mercy, and the remnant will be saved, right? So, and all these can be read in terms of things that happened in the 8th century. Things that happened in the first century, perhaps things that are happening now, and things that will happen at the end of time in the eschaton, at the last thing. So there is an eschatological way, that means a way to read Isaiah in key of also the last judgment, you know, the end of the world. Most things in the scripture you can read that way as well. Remember, a lot of those ideas have multiple applications. Application within their day, application a little bit farther down, application really far down, and then application in our days, and then slingshot into the future, another kind of application.
It's like the layers of the onion that you keep peeling back.
That's right. So another little tidbit, a lot of the church fathers, because Isaiah was so important, a lot of church fathers of the third and fourth century wrote extensive commentaries on Isaiah. And one of them was our friend St. Jerome, right? St. Jerome, it was in his introduction to the book of Isaiah, so in his commentary on Isaiah, that St. Jerome coined the famous phrase, ignorance of scripture is ignorance of Christ. It's contained right in this Jerome's commentary on Isaiah. So from that, we can extrapolate ignorance of Isaiah is ignorance of Christ, right?
Right.
He also, Jerome states that in the book of Isaiah are contained, quote, all the mysteries of the will of the Lord, unquote, meaning that if you get a handle on the book of Isaiah, you have a handle on all the major themes of salvation history, which is really saying something, you know?
That is saying something.
So let's go back to the person of Isaiah himself. We think he was born around the year 700 BC, that he lived in Jerusalem, that he was from a priestly and perhaps noble family, judging from the fact that he was cultured, that his education, from his contacts within the court, and also with the fact that he was supposed to be giving prophetic insight to the king of Judah. He was married, we know from his book, with at least two children that we know of. Because like other prophets, like Hosea, for instance, he names his two children that appear in the book, probably he had more, with programmatic names, you know, with names that have to do with one of his prophecies. So that's important as well. He prophesies under four different kings. We do know that according to Isaiah 6, in the year of the death of King Uzziah. King Uzziah was a righteous king who was stricken with leprosy for having taken on some priestly prerogatives, but on the most part, he was a good guy. And the way that the kings of old operated was that the old father king, when he was older or sick, would take on his successor, his son, his heir, as a co-regent, you know, as a co-ruler. And this is the pattern that you see throughout the four kings that rule in Judah during the time, the long, long career of Isaiah the prophet. So he's called under Uzziah, who died in 740. So we know that at least by 740, Isaiah was listening to the Lord and conveying the message. The next king was Jehu. Jehu was son of Uzziah, and he was a so-so king, but not very good. Jehu's son Ahaz was a very unrighteous king, and then his son Hezekiah was actually one of the better kings of Judah. Unfortunately, Hezekiah dies in 681, and his son Manasseh succeeds him. If you know anything about the history of Israel, the history of Judah, you know that Manasseh is one of the bad ones. Right. He may be one of the worst ones. He is one of the ones, like his father, his grandfather Ahaz, who actually sacrificed his children in the fire to Molech, who buried his children in the foundations of buildings in order to, you know, he basically indulged in the destructive pagan practices of his time, right?
Right.
Out of superstitious fear, wanting to curry favor with gods he wasn't really sure existed. That's why one of the major themes in the book of Isaiah is the fact that only Yahweh is God. Only the Lord is God. Adonai Eloheinu, Adonai Echad. Only God is the Lord. The other idols, the other pagan gods, are nothing but pieces of wood or pieces of stone, no matter how much jewelry they have on them, no matter how beautiful fabrics or paint or how they are made to look or how with what skill that they may have been sculpted, they are only inanimate objects. And so to rely on idols like the pagans do and like, unfortunately, some of the kings of Israel do, mm-hmm. is a breach of the covenant. So hopefully we're tying together some themes even this early on, right?
Right.
So as early Uzziah, the basic theme of Isaiah's message is that salvation, you can't earn salvation. He has wonderful passages that are, don't I own all the cattle that you're trying to offer me? You know, Hosea 6:6, but it's very similar to what Isaiah said. I desire mercy, not sacrifice. That's kind of the theme, that empty religious ritualism had already crept into all the things that the Jews in Judah were doing, and also, of course, in the kingdom to the north. Now, if you know anything about the history of Israel in this period, you know that the northern kingdom is doomed from its inception because it was founded on political opportunism and the rather cynical belief of his founder, the guy who first succeeded from the kingdom of Judah under Rehoboam, the grandson of David, that somehow the people in the north would deal with the loss of access to the temple because he wasn't going to allow them to go to the rival nation of Judah, right, to the south, in order to worship. So then he started very cynical calculations and saying, no, you don't have to go to the temple in Jerusalem, where, by mind you, at this point, there's still the Ark of the Covenant, the presence of God is there, et cetera, right? That's where God said to go. But instead, this ruler, the first ruler of Israel, makes this very cynical calculus and says, oh, no, come on, we'll build you a better one in Shiloh. And we'll build you a better one in Bethel. And we will bet, you know, it's like these makeshift temples where they were going to worship God, but a God that was filtered through what the king thought the God should be like. So it's basically syncretism.
Well, the message is that the people matter, not, you know, how many things they sacrificed to God and so on and so forth. I mean, I think he was the one that was opening up to everyone that there is a personal God who cares about them as people, as persons.
As people, and that no matter how many sacrifices they offer, if they are unrighteous in their heart, if they're not dealing with the poor appropriately, if they are, you know, not holding to certain righteous standards, it doesn't matter how many sacrifices.
Yeah, right? It's all for naught.
In conclusion, for today, we can just say this. There is application for today, isn't there, Mary Lou?
Absolutely.
For every garden variety Catholic out there who thinks that just going to Mass on Sunday two or three times a month is going to check the box, that is, you all, empty religious ritualism. And we have been here before, and the nation of Israel was here before. And the message of Isaiah is, love the Lord your God with all your heart, with all your mind, with all your soul, with all your strength. Thank you for joining us.
Breadbox Media Programming is brought to you by Jack Kane Ford. Find your next Ford Tough vehicle at caneford.com.